Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 29th. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. Today, we welcome back one of our favorite veterinarians, Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. That's right, it's Pets and Vets today. If you have a question about your dog, cat, or other pet, no need to terrier self up about it. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. You can also email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. But again, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Anything is possible today. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin and your pet calls coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Jackie Orchard, filling in for Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and on the line we have Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University and a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998. Dr. O'Loughlin and her husband, Mike, share their home with 2 dogs, 6 cats, 2 fish tanks, and a pond, complete with even more fish and frogs. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Again, that number, it's 1-800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And a note, please provide as much information as you can on your pet, including their age and gender, if you're submitting a question online. Dr. O'Loughlin, welcome back to Vox Pop.
Well, thank you, Jackie. It's nice to have you on.
It's great to talk to you again. And I have to say, I visited Del Mar Animal Hospital with my dog recently, and I noticed there are a lot of changes to how you can accept customers and their pets. So talk to me a little bit about what you've had to change since COVID-19 hit.
Yeah, so I would say we're in the same boat as most veterinarians, pretty much all the veterinarians I know in the area that are all basically doing what we're calling curbside service. So to keep our staff and the customers safe, we basically have clients wait in their cars in the parking lot with their pets. We have one of our staff members, we're calling them a runner, who goes out and checks them in. And then when the veterinarian's ready to see the animal, one of our assistants goes out to the car and gets the animal and brings them in the hospital. So the clients stay out in the parking lot, and the pets are the ones that come in the hospital. The only changes to that are, obviously, if it's a euthanasia, we feel badly if it's the pet's last visit and the last time the owners are going to be with their animal. We do allow them to come in as long as they are masked and, you know, obviously not sick. We've also actually in this time of year been doing some of our euthanasias in our backyard. We have a nice big tree back there, and it's a nice peaceful spot to have the animal go on their way. So that's it. It's a lot of work, and my staff is sweating a lot running back and forth to the parking lot. And I thank God for them every day. They're working their little tails off, and I truly appreciate them. They're a great bunch that we have working for us.
So I know a lot of times when I take my dog to the vet, it's a little bit easier on the veterinarian if I can pet him and keep him calm and maybe hold his collar while they do the shots. I mean, for you right now, what is the most frustrating part about just not having the clients come in with their dog or cat?
Well, you know, to be honest, a lot of times the animals are sometimes better without their owner there, believe it or not. I think they don't feel like they need to be as protective. We have had a few isolated occasions where the animal is so frightened that we do have the owners come in with them. But for the most part, the animals do just fine. The biggest problem, of course, is communication with the client. And we do a combination of things, from calling them out in the parking lot to going out ourselves to the parking lot to talk to them, to make sure we're all on the same page. But It's mostly been working pretty smoothly. The nice thing with not having, you know, a bunch of clients in the hospital is a lot of times, we get these puppies in and they're running all over the hospital visiting everybody, and they have a great time. It's like, doggy play group. So.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She is on the line to answer your questions about your cat, dog, fish, you name it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. O'Loughlin, I have an email in front of me. What do you say we start with that to kick things off?
Sure.
So this is from Ann in Pokag? I'm sorry. I haven't been living here very long. Her name is Anne, for sure. She says, our cat Sally is 14 years old and by our veterinarian's evaluation is in good health for her age. About 3 or 4 times a week, she bites our feet, ankles, or shins when we walk by her, sometimes drawing blood. We've had her since she was a kitten and have never abused her. We don't routinely step on her or harass her. She's done this for the last 6 years, although it has become more frequent. Is this play to her, however painful it is to us, or is she a cranky cat? Many thanks for the show. And that's from Anne.
Yeah, so basically she's hunting them. This is a hunting / play behavior.
Oh my.
So what we often recommend is to sort of redirect their attention. Make sure she's got some good interactive play toys to play with, to keep her happy, and give her something else to entertain herself with. I'm also a big fan of Jackson Galaxy, who is a cat behaviorist. He's on the Animal Planet. He has a TV show on there about my cat from hell or something like that.
Yeah.
And he has a great set of videos on YouTube. If you Google, cat attacking me kind of thing, he's got some really good videos about how to deal with this. So I tend to point people towards his information. I will say, as veterinarians, we honestly get very little behavior training in vet school. Okay. At least back when I went to school, we got very little training. So it's I usually tend to send behavior issues to people that have more information, but it's certainly a play behavior, play / hunting behavior. So they have to give that cat something to play with or to hunt.
How many cats?
So it doesn't hunt them.
Don't you have cats? How many do you have?
Actually, it said in the bio I have 6. I'm down to 3.
Okay, gotcha.
So
have your cats ever tried to hunt your ankles?
We have one cat who tends to be the stalker. He stalks the other cats and he sometimes stalks us, but not us as often as the other. His fellow housemates, unfortunately, get the brunt of his hunting.
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She's on the line to answer your questions about your cat, dog, or fish, whatever you have. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. The lines are loaded, but before we get to those calls, we'll take a quick break, and Vox Pop will be right back after this. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She is on the line to answer your questions about your cat, your dog, your fish, your lizard. I don't know, 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. O'Loughlin, we have calls stacking up right now. What do you say we get to some of those calls?
Sounds good.
All right, let's start with Rich in New Hartford. Rich, you're on.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, doctor. I have a 15-year-old Karen Terrier who has a history of liquid diarrhea, and it was treated successfully with metronidazole.
Metronidazole.
Thank you. I'll never say it right. and at that point, at some point, she really was really refusing to eat, and she had an appetite stimulator. And when she went off the antibiotics, the diarrhea came back. She's back on it again. Her stool is soft but well-formed. She readily eats. At this point, she's eating Mostly we have a boiled hamburger with some lettuce and occasionally a little bit of apple. But she keeps losing weight. My question to you is there any kind of a diet or supplement that might help her absorb more of the nutrients? Mm. The other thing was they suggested a Texas GI panel, and I wanted to know if you thought that was worth it. And there is a site that they suggested in products called Balance IT. And
yep.
Your thoughts or recommendations on those items.
Okay. So, yes, you know, when you have a dog like yours who's had what we're calling a malabsorption, so they're not absorbing their food properly. We sometimes see this in older dogs. Their intestines just don't seem to work as well as they used to. And the idea of doing the blood panel from Texas A&M is to see if the dog has something called inflammatory bowel disease. And they're looking to see if the dog is not absorbing certain vitamins, which will point you towards what part of the intestine is or is not working. And also to see if they have problems with pancreatic enzymes and things like that. So it's not a cheap blood test, but it certainly gives you a ton of information, and it's very non-invasive versus doing, you know, biopsies of the intestine or things like that. So I think it's a good thing to do. The Balance It website is a good website we recommend it a lot too, for people who want to home cook for their pet, because trying to home cook and make a balanced diet for your pet is extremely difficult, because you often don't give the right balance of nutrients. They don't get the vitamins and minerals they need. And the Balance It website will let you pick what ingredients you want to use, and then they basically give you a recipe. And they also offer a balanced mineral vitamin supplement that you can buy from them that you're going to make sure the dog's getting all their nutrients. Now, that said, I often just recommend either a commercial or a prescription easily digestible diet. And a lot of times dogs do great on that when their intestines are not working as well anymore. So that's something to consider
like
as well.
The low-fat or the hydrolyzed protein?
Well, the hydrolyzed protein is more for the inflammatory bowel disease, because that is you're giving the dog proteins that the body won't recognize. But not all dogs need that. You know, it could be your dog is just getting older and isn't absorbing his food as well and just needs a plain, like, chicken and rice or hamburger and rice type diet. And they make that in a commercial diet that's fully balanced for the dog. There are prescription easily digestible diets, and there are over-the-counter easily digestible diets. So,
Rich, okay. Does that answer your
right.
question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Okay, Rich,
yep.
Thanks.
The other thing I would say is probiotics might also be a good thing to add in as well.
Good to know. So. All right, we've got a ton of other calls. I think we should go to Jane in Livingston Manor. Jane, what is the name of your new puppy?
Georgie.
Oh, that's a cute name. All right, now what's wrong with it?
Okay, so I have two questions. She is a 14-week-old blue heeler puppy, and her house training is progressing pretty normally, except that sometimes in the middle of the day when she takes a nap, she urinates in her sleep, and it doesn't happen overnight. And it doesn't always happen, and there's no other signs of there being an infection or anything like that. And it's not necessarily medical, and it's not necessarily behavioral, and I don't know how to address it.
Dr. O'Loughlin?
Interesting. So you're actually seeing her leaking while she sleeps, or she wakes up from a nap and there's a wet spot under her?
She wakes up from a nap and the whole side of her is, you know, the side that she was laying on is soaked in urine.
Hmm. Yeah, it's pretty unusual. We certainly see. Yeah, and I assume she's not spayed.
Yeah. No.
Right. No. Okay. Because you can see that in spayed females, but Go ahead.
Sorry. Some of the advice I've gotten is to maybe let her go through one heat, and that it might correct itself if it hasn't already.
Right. That there is a what's called a juvenile vaginitis that female puppies can get, and having them go through a heat cycle does help with that. That tends to give them more urgency and more, they show signs of like a bladder infection. The actual leaking while she's sleeping is a little different. And it does make me a little concerned she could have something more serious, like a congenital defect where her ureters were not hooked up quite correctly to her bladder or something like that. I assume, has you had her urine looked at just to make sure her urine looks normal by your vet?
You keep going back for shots, and I keep mentioning it, and I don't think that they're hearing me about how inconsistent the issue is. They did try to take a urine sample yesterday, but apparently it was too diluted.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. Besides doing some imaging of the bladder to see, it's a tough thing to diagnose. I guess the one thing would be to see if it continues on as she ages. It's a little unusual, I have to say. I don't have a clear answer for you on that one.
But maybe another urine test if it weren't diluted. Do you think that would help, Dr. Laughlin?
Yeah, I'm not sure what they meant by it being diluted, though. the easiest thing is if you can, just take her out for one of her walks and with a shallow little cup.
That's what they said, to grab a morning sample the next time we come in.
Right, right. And the fresher, the better, because urine samples really need to be looked at within an hour. So if you can catch it and then get it right to the vet, that's the best thing.
All right, Jane,
And then
you.
My other issue.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, my other question is just about car sickness. She seems to be getting car sick. And so I have her in the front seat, and I tried to boost her up, but getting her to look forward is, I just wondered if you had any tips or tricks for that.
Yeah.
Because I think that will help.
Number one, I would be careful about having her ride in the front seat, because God forbid you get in an accident. I've seen dogs with broken necks from the airbag. So that's one thing that you need to be careful of, is having your dog riding in the front seat. But the other is, just getting her used to riding in the car, short trips. You can give them either Dramamine or Benadryl beforehand, and that will sometimes help with the motion sickness. Most dogs will outgrow this. It's usually, hopefully, a short-term thing. But getting her used to very short trips and then slowly making them longer. And obviously, if you know you're taking in the car, don't feed her before you take her. She doesn't have a bunch of food in her stomach.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
All right. Good luck.
Dr. O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She is on the line to answer all of your questions about your cat, dog, fish, etc. You name it. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. Dr. O'Loughlin, we have an email here. This is Carol. She wants to know what you suggest when looking to adopt two kittens. We have been without cats for a few years, and we miss them. It's time. Should we look at the same litter, and where is the best place to find healthy cats? And that is from Carol.
Oh, my goodness. Well, usually this time of year, there are kittens pretty much everywhere because it's kitten season. So, the shelters will usually have them. There's a lot of local, I don't know where this person is from, but there are local rescue in the Albany area. There are several cat rescue groups. there's, you know, your local farmer usually will have a barn full. I do like getting kittens in pairs. I think it makes them have someone to play with, and they're fun to have in pairs, and it's nice to have them grow up together. You know, whether you get the same litter or not, it doesn't really matter. I went to a farm once and took two kittens out of one litter and another one that kept following me around and wouldn't leave me alone. And I finally grabbed him and took him too. And he was a different litter, and they all grew up together and did great. So, it doesn't have to be the same litter, but I do like getting kittens in pairs. I think that's a good idea.
Now, with COVID-19 still stretching on, I mean, what have you heard about adoption centers? Are they doing limited adoptions, just nothing in person? Are these places open if you wanted to adopt kittens right now?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure, to be honest. I don't know. I know we have been getting a lot of, you know, adopted puppies and things through rescue organizations. So I would think the kitten rescues are still, I mean, they may not be having public adoption clinics, but I'm sure they still have kittens that need homes.
Okay.
So,
there is a
website called Pet Finders,
right?
Has a lot of rescue groups on it. So,
Pet Finders. All right. Well, we still have lots and lots of calls. Let's knock some of those out. We go now to Meg in Beacon, New York. Meg, you're on.
Thank you. I have a question. I have a dog who's a 4-year-old Bernese Mountain Dog. I've had him for 4 months, and so I'm still getting straightened out with his care because of COVID. It's been a little tricky. And I wanted to ask, he did have a blood test that said it was positive for anaplasmosis. And I think from the records that I had seen before, I think it had been positive before I owned him too. So I'm wondering, does he have anaplasmosis now, or is there any way to tell if, you know, if it's current or not?
Let's start with, okay, what is endoplasmosis?
Yes. So anaplasmosis is one of the tick diseases that we test for when we do a heartworm tick test. It's most veterinarians run a 4-way heartworm and tick disease panel as a routine screening. And it checks for heartworm and 3 tick diseases, Lyme, anaplasma, and Ehrlichia. And we have been seeing a lot of anaplasma-positive dogs in the last couple of years. It came in from the Midwest, and it's been growing in this area. The good news is anaplasma seems to infect dogs pretty easily as far as making a positive test, but it's not very good at making dogs sick. We get a lot of dogs that test positive, and the vast majority of them never get ill. However, there's no way to know from that initial blood test whether they actively have anaplasma in their system. There is a follow-up test that you can send in, usually using the same sample that they got for the first blood test, and it's called a PCR, and that is looking for the actual genetic makeup of the bacteria itself. So it will tell you if there's active bacteria in the dog's bloodstream when that blood test was done. If this was done a while ago and you want to have a test, they would just have to draw another blood sample. So we will often recommend that people send that in to see if the dog actively has the bacteria in their system. Because if they do, then we usually do treat them. If they just test positive and they have a negative PCR, then they don't need treatment.
And what is the treatment, Dr. O'Loughlin?
It's antibiotics. Okay. Antibiotics for a month. And we don't like to treat dogs that just come up positive because, like I said, probably 90% of them are never going to get sick. And we don't like to overuse antibiotics.
Meg, does that answer your question?
I just had a quick one. Just a quick one about a raw diet, too. a local company in our area sells raw dog food. It's like a beef company where they grind up bones and meat. And I don't know what you think of that. I've heard different things about it. Some people worry that it's maybe dangerous, but I just wondered if you have any thoughts on that.
I am one of those in the camp of I don't like raw diets. I think for some dogs they work fine, and if they're handled correctly, but it's so easy for them to be not handled correctly, for dogs to get sick, for people to get sick handling the raw diets. I just think the risk reward is not worth it in my mind.
Meg, thank you very much for the call. Now, Dr. O'Loughlin, I have a question about these raw diets. I mean, is it kind of like a misnomer that cooking the raw or cooking for your dog at home or getting them the raw diet, like somehow that became the hot new thing to do for dogs? And you're saying that actually the combination dry foods might be better?
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily, I mean, I know a lot of people don't like dry food. It doesn't have to be dry food. I mean, wet foods are good too. It's the nutritional value of home cooking. 95% of people who home cook for their dogs don't do it properly. They don't make a balanced diet. And raw foods, while they've gotten better, they have certainly gotten improved. And now a lot of the, you know, stores have refrigerated cases and all that. But if it's not handled just right, there's a lot of bacteria that can get in those raw diets. And I had one dog that kept getting sick, and the owners finally got him off the raw diet, and he's not getting sick anymore. So it can lead to illness. And I just think it's not worth the raw. People like to say, oh, but it's, you know, natural, and it's what wild animals would eat. Well, the wild animals only live about 6 or 7 years. Do you want your dog to live 6 or 7 years, or do you want to live to be 14 or 15?
Mm.
So,
how much of veterinarian school is dedicated to nutrition?
I had one class, to be honest.
So did you learn a lot of this on the job then, or through your own personal
experience?
Yes.
I mean, veterinarians do have to do continuing education all through their career. We have to get a certain number of continuing ed credits to keep our license.
Mm.
So, yes, I've done more nutrition classes through my continuing ed than I ever had in vet school, including about raw diets. That was one of the latest ones. So,
Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She is on the line to answer your questions about your cat, your dog, your fish, what have you. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Again, that's 1-800-348-2551. 2551. We've got tons of calls left to get to, some emails too, but first we'll take a quick break. Vox Pop, we'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital is our guest today. She is on the line to answer your questions about your pets. 1-800-348-2551 is the number to call. Again, that number is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. O'Loughlin, Natalie from Burnt Hills has been waiting for over 30 minutes. What do you say we get to her?
Yeah, let's do that.
Natalie, you're on.
Well, thank you so much, and the reason I'm calling is because of this fabulous show, I convinced my medical student son and his medical student girlfriend to feed their 3-year-old rescue cat wet food. Now the cat is always meowing and very insistent until he gets more. He's always been a piggy. Is there anything I can do to direct them how to change his behavior?
He likes it too much.
Well, I guess, yes. One thing, it depends. Are they feeding him enough? My general rule of thumb is a tuna fish size can of food per day, or two of the smaller, like fancy feast size cans per day per cat. But it also depends on the food that they're feeding. You can look at most of the websites now for the pet foods will give the calorie content. And cats mm-hmm. generally need around 300 calories a day. So you have to look. I was feeding my one cat my regular cat tuna fish size can per day, and then found out the type of food I was feeding her didn't have that many calories in it. So I had to bump her up to a can and a half. So it may be that they're not giving enough. The other thing may be the cat is just used to, you know, having food out all the time and doesn't like it that it's not out. So you could, I know getting her on the canned food, great idea, wonderful. And as long as the cat's not diabetic, you can do things like get one of those little treat balls and put either a couple of treats or a couple of pieces of dry food in the treat ball and let the cat swat it around and get food that way. Or they can break up the feedings and don't give all of, you know, the wet food in just two meals. Give some at breakfast, give a little bit, you know, later, whatever. And lastly, just, you know, get the cat used to, if they don't want to do that, they just want to do two meals a day, say, guess what, kitty? You're going to get used to the idea the food goes down. You know, if you meow at me, you might get a pet, but you're not going to get more food. And sometimes it's a little bit of just retraining the cat.
All right, Natalie, thank you for the call. We go now to Fred in Wineskill. Fred, you're on.
Hi, I've got a 9-year-old female who about 5 years ago developed, they diagnosed her as having megacolon. So my vet, I have her on a prescription diet with high psyllium content. And I was talking to some of the pet stores, and they were saying that they didn't think that food was that good. But I still keep her on that, but I add about a quarter of another kind of food in with it. So she gets maybe some better nourishment. And she's been either purely on that or on this little mix, and it's dry food. She's been pretty regular. She's regular every 2 days, and they're very large poops. And I was just curious, she's 9 now, is this possibly going to become more and more of a problem as she gets older?
Dr.
And what
Lamar?
Should I look for?
Well, unfortunately, yes. Megacolon in cats, so it's basically when the colon gets stretched out because the cat has had a constipation issue. As cats get older, they can naturally have more constipation issues, even if they never had a constipation issue before, because they tend to start to have problems balancing their water as their kidneys age. So we do see a lot more constipation in older cats. So if you have a cat who's had constipation issues in their younger years, it could get worse when they get older. So you definitely want to keep a sharp eye on the quality of their stool. You know, is it getting hard and dry?
Right.
Sometimes we need to add things like Miralax to draw more water into the stool, things like that, to keep them regular. And whatever you do, you want to make sure she's having a regular poop, because if it starts to build up, you're going to stretch that colon out even more, and you don't want that.
I keep an eye on that pretty closely. I do in the mornings. Well, I feed her and the other cats basically 4 times a day. I mix out their food. They're not overweight. I mix her food with some wet food and a little bit of water in the first meal in the morning with the dry food. Would it be good to do that maybe more often with her meals as far as the food?
Yeah, you really can't give them too much water. So, I mean, especially with a cat with a colon issue. If she'll eat a little bit of extra water in all her meals, that would be great, just to make sure she's staying hydrated. That's very important.
And just keep an eye on it.
Yep. Yep.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred.
Oh, you're welcome. Good luck.
Okay, we go now to Elaine in Lenox. Elaine, you're on.
Okay, great. Thank you for taking my phone call. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
You bet.
Great. So I have 2 questions. I live in a tourist town, and there's lots of dogs and tourists here this weekend, and I thought the concrete might be too hot for their feet. So is there a temperature that you suggest people, like when it's above 80, that they don't walk their dog on concrete or et cetera? That's the first question. I'll let you answer that one first.
Let's start there.
Yeah, that's a good one. I don't know of an absolute temperature cutoff that I would say, but certainly, you know, at the height of the day, no matter, you know, whether you're on concrete or not, you do need to be careful taking your dogs out with, you know, the other day it was 100 degree heat index. You know, you shouldn't be out walking your dog in that weather. It's just too hot. I mean, especially the older dogs, dogs with, you know, well, no matter what fur coat they have, it's just, it's too hot. So I would be cautious. I would say, I don't know, above 85, I'd be careful about walking them on the concrete. I would say most dogs have pretty tough feet. I don't tend to see dogs with any kind of burns or issues with their foot pads. The only problem would be if it was like a freshly paved area where there could still be some oils. I would be careful about that. But most dogs seem to be pretty tough about walking on the hot pavement. And it's just more the overheating that you need to worry about.
Elaine,
My second question is, I'm going to be a puppy raiser for a service dog. And
Thank you.
And I'm new to the East Coast, so I'm not familiar with ticks and all the different products. And I know that pets, you know, bring in ticks. So what do you suggest for a dog that's going to be out and about a lot, you know, mostly in town and, you know, meeting people and you go into the bathroom, but I don't want to bring ticks in my home. So what products do you like that are also safe?
Well, I would say there are a lot of very safe flea and tick products out on the market now. You know, the most of the ones that are sold through veterinary offices, you know, there's, I don't know, Jackie, am I allowed to say brand names?
You can say brand names, no prices.
Okay. Okay. So, you know, there are things like NexGard, which is an oral flea and tick product. We like that a lot just because it's so easy to use. There's Vectra 3D, which is a spot-on product that also has a repellent to help repel the ticks. There's the Seresto collars. A lot of people like those if you don't mind your dog wearing a collar. There's Advantix is another spot-on product. So there are a lot of good Bravecto is a new one that's every 3 months for dogs. So there are a lot of good flea products. One thing I would be cautious about is buying some of these things online if you get a really, really good price because there are some counterfeit products out there. So it's kind of buyer beware, you get what you pay for. If you buy a cheap flea and tick product, it's probably not good.
Right. Now, the NexGard, the oral, does that is that like once a month or once every 6 months?
Once a month. Most of the products are once a month, except for the Bravecto, which is every 3 months, and the Seresto collars, which I believe last 8 months, I think they're labeled for. Something like that. Mm-hmm.
So with the NexGard, when they take it internally, does it mean that the tick won't bite them, but they'll still come in on their fur?
No, the NexGard works. Yeah, right. There's no product that's going to keep every tick off the dog. I will tell you that. But if they have any product in them or on them, I always say that they're basically a dead bug walking. You know, if you have a dog come in with a tick that literally they just brushed up against a branch of something and got the tick on them and walk in the house, it could potentially crawl off the dog and onto a person, but it's pretty rare. I mean, most of the time the tick wants to be on the dog. That's their preferred critter. And once they get on the dog and they either come in contact with the product or they bite the dog, they're dead.
All right, Elaine, thank you for the call. Dr. O'Loughlin is our guest today. She is from Del Mar Animal Hospital. The number is 1-800-348-2551. Dr. O'Loughlin, I actually read a trick for determining if the concrete is too hot for your dog. You're supposed to kneel down and put your hand flat on the concrete. And if you can hold your hand comfortably on the concrete for 10 seconds without it burning, then your dog should be okay. Is that something you would agree with?
Huh, I had never heard that, but Yeah, I would think their feet are probably tougher than your hand.
Yeah.
So I would think if it's too hot for your hand, I mean, if it's really too hot for your hand, I think it would be too hot for them. But I still think their paws are probably a little tougher than the palm of your hand.
Definitely.
But it wouldn't be a bad thing to check.
And the other thing I noticed is, I mean, I have an Arctic breed dog. When we go hiking in the winter, if it's too cold for his paws, he'll start picking up his back feet a lot. Like when we're just standing there, he'll like alternate picking up his paws because he doesn't want them in the snow. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe if it was too hot, he would do the same thing. He'd be doing a dance.
Yeah, I have seen dogs do that if they get onto a surface where there's, you know, like it was tarred recently and it's hot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you've seen them dancing, it's definitely too hot, for sure.
All right. Well, Linda's been waiting for about 30 minutes now. Linda, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, I've been looking for a new puppy locally, and I haven't had much luck. So I've started looking online at surrounding states, but I'm also very worried about scams, and I don't know what to ask or what to look out for.
Hmm.
Do you have any advice?
Are you looking for a particular breed? Or just looking for... Oh, okay. So you're worried about like a puppy mill or one of those kind of things?
Right. I have no idea. I know there are some sites that just are for advertising people. You know, they put their dogs online and they have all these disclaimers about being not liable for anything. And I really, you know, I'm very suspicious. I've known people who've been scammed, and I really don't know what to ask.
Yeah. I mean, I would just, you know, ask some questions about their breeding practices. You know, how many dogs do you have? How long have you been doing this for? You know, how are the dogs housed? Do they live in the house with you? Are they out in the kennel? You know, that kind of thing, and just get an idea. Do they have any references? Could you give me names of some people that have gotten puppies from you? I'd like to talk to them about how the puppies have done, things like that. If they're not willing to give you references or, you know, anything like that or veterinary references, yeah, I would back off. But, you know, if they're pretty open and willing or send you pictures of their facilities or, you know, talk about the dogs that they've had or sound very personable, then... you know, then it's probably a legit thing.
All right, Linda, thank you for the call. We've got about 4 minutes left in our show today with Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital. Try to get through as many of these as we can. Dr. O'Loughlin, do you fix birds? Is that one of your things?
No, I don't. I don't do birds, unfortunately.
Okay, then we are going to...
anyone's got a bird question out there, I'm very sorry.
All right, I'm sorry. Lynn, we're not going to go to you because she cannot fix your parrot. I'm very sorry about that. But we will go to Michael in Amherst. Michael, you're on.
Well, thank you. A quick question. I'll try to get through this. My dog's got a processing of protein kidney problem, and she's on enalapril. And she's about 8 or 9 years old, and I'm hoping that it's not simply going to go from where it is now to worse with time as she ages. Any other suggestions about what I can do in terms of palatable food? She's on a prescription diet now. That's the name of it, I think, prescription, given to me by the vet, and she doesn't like the taste of it that much. So any thoughts?
Well, there are a bunch of different makers of kidney diets, so you could certainly speak to your vet about trying a different brand.
No, I agree. No, I am. I'm going to try another brand now.
Yeah, but I mean, I always say kidney diets are great if the animal loves them. If they don't love them and they're not eating, that's not doing them any good. So.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say now it used to be there was only one kidney diet out there, Hill's KD. They were the original, the original prescription diet of anything was KD diet. Now there's Hill's, there's Purina, there's Royal Canin, there are a bunch of different diets out there, and they have different flavors, different textures. So usually we can find something that they'll like. And then worst case scenario, if they won't eat any of the pre-made prescription diets. Then there is always the home-cooked diet if you go through, you know, doing it balanced. As I don't know if you heard earlier, we were talking about the Balance It website.
I did.
And they will help you make up a low-protein home-cooked diet. But there are a lot of different choices out there now. So I would, but that would be, especially for a protein-losing kidney disease, you do want to be careful about the diet and try not to overstress those kidneys.
Michael, thank you for the call. We go now probably to our last caller. This is Louise in Wurtsboro. Louise, you're on.
Hi. Hello, doctor. Yes, I have my cat for almost 4 years. It's from the shelter. It was a child, whatever. And he has HIV, feline HIV, and I got conflicting information about obtaining another cat. Like the woman at the shelter said that it would be okay that she has HIV cats and they're okay to have playmates.
15
and
seconds.
Then, yeah.
So FIV is spread through bite wounds. So as long as the cats get along, then it's safe for them to live together. But that's always a concern when you're introducing new cats. So as long as they get along, they're safe. It's not spread through food dishes or litter boxes. So it's just a matter of cohabitation and getting along.
All right. We are just about out of time, unfortunately, but I want to thank everyone who called in and apologize to those left on the line. I'd also like to thank Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for joining us on the line today. Support for Vox Pop comes from Mother Earth Storehouse, open 7 days, working to help keep our communities safe and supplied with EDC goods and services, serving the Hudson Valley with organic and all-natural food since 1978. MotherEarthStorehouse.com. Thank you again for joining us today. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by the great Matt Plummer. I am producer and host this week, Jackie Orchard. Tomorrow, it's The Gardening Show. Stay tuned now for 51%.